This is Naval Rabakant. I'm here with Kapil Gupta, and we're just having a conversation as two friends who like to explore topics fairly deeply. And in a way that we're just trying to understand the truth, and the truth is a word that gets thrown around a lot, so I'm not even sure exactly what that means. Definition that I like to use is that, you know, there are multiple definitions. In fact, this might be a good question. How do you know when something is true? In my mind, very often, I know something is true just because it feels true to me. It feels very true. You know it when you hear it, even if you don't like it. Another definition I've used is that truth is that which has predictive power. You can use it to predict the future a little bit. The more accurately you can use something to predict the future, the more true it is. But I'm sure you, Kapil, have very different definitions. So why don't you give me a definition or two of how you know something is true?
I very much agree with your first answer, which is that it relates very much to feel. Oftentimes when you hear truth, the inner sensation that you get of a resonance is beyond the intellect. And I think that is a great sign. Because oftentimes we'll feel something that someone says, and we'll feel it viscerally as soon as it is said. And we will have a hard, at the very same time, we'll have a hard time intellectually framing it and understanding it. And that is a very good sign that something is true, because in very many ways, we are beings in spite of our intelligence. We tend to use our intelligence as the machinery with which to process things. However, that's a very limited domain, intelligence. And so when it cuts straight through that into the essence of something, something within our core for which we have receptors, so to speak, seems to grasp that. And I think that's a very good sign of truth.
And very often it can, sometimes it just leaves you silent. Sometimes it actually creates an emotional response, especially if it's aimed at your identity or your ego. You know, like little kids have a way of telling truth in a way that adults don't. Like if you're fat, a little kid would just come up and say, "Hey, you're fat," right? In a way that an adult won't. And sometimes that can provoke a reaction from an adult because they're not ready for that. That level of truth, you're not supposed to go around saying in society. It's not socially acceptable. Anyway, yeah, I don't want to get caught up in definitional games too much. I wanted to get into a specific topic, which is you recently wrote a discourse about hard work. Which I thought was really, really interesting. You know, I have a bunch of views on hard work. Maybe I'll start off at a very high level. Like, I think hard work is important, but I think hard work is an effect of something that you know needs to be done. Like, if you need to do hard work to get something done that you care about, then you work hard. But a lot of what I see going on these days is hard work for its own sake. And I think we live in a very different era than one that we evolved in. We live in an era of almost infinite leverage. And that means, like, when you are working, your decisions mean they echo larger. So there's code working for you. There's people working for you. There's money that's working for you. So there's machines working for you. It isn't just that you're standing there with your bare hands and tearing at something. You have tools. We're tool-bearing creatures. And so because of all these tools we have available, our judgment matters much more than hard work. So even though I think sometimes you do need to work hard and you should never shy away from it, if that's what it takes to succeed in whatever you want, I do think that it gets overplayed in society. So that's kind of my view on hard work, but I think it's probably a little more conventional than yours. So I just wanted to explore it together with you a little bit. How do you think about hard work?
I think hard work is yet another example of a prescription, to be honest with you. I think it's done largely out of anxiety. I think hard work is done largely out of fear. I think one of the common things that you will often hear in the world of sports and business is that if you're not working hard, then the next guy is. And if you're only putting in 4 hours, he's putting in 12. And so hard work has become its own game. It's like meditation. Meditation becomes a competition. So the thing that you were really seeking actually becomes replaced by the game of hard work. And hard work, like effort, becomes sort of its own goal. And that seems to be the pattern behind things, is when you follow a prescription or an intermediary, then that intermediary tends to replace the ultimate goal, and that becomes your new game. So hard work, it isn't, you know, the person who needs to work hard will work hard, but it isn't that he needs to be told to work hard and he needs to strive towards working hard. I think hard work is the result of something. I think whatever needs to be done when a person has a sufficient and requisite degree of desire, he will do. And from the outside, that will come off and reflect as hard work to those who are looking. But it isn't the opposite. It isn't that if I work hard, then I will get this, because then that introduces what I call a gap. And that gap is that I must introduce some step in the middle, that I am being promised that if I fulfill that step, that some powers that be or some force out of the universe will grant me what I want because I have satisfied that step. And I think that is the fault. I think that is the way that everyone looks at things and is being taught to look at things. Many things are named, and in the naming, problems exist and problems arise. So if someone wants to become arrive at the top of their field, you know, does that mean that they don't work hard? No, but they would never view it as working hard. They would view it as, I will do whatever needs to be done to get there. And I don't consider that work necessarily. Yeah, I consider that necessities, you know.
You look at the experts, and to them, what may look like hard work from the outside, to them is play from the inside.
That's right.
In fact, one of the things I really think people should focus much more on is figuring out what feels like play to them but looks like work to others.
That's right.
Because that's your superpower, and that's where you'll just outperform everybody. You know, I see with startups all the time. I see lots of people who work really hard but still fail. And often, you know, the most common reason is they just pick the wrong thing to do. The world is a big place. It's very hard to figure out what's going to work before it works. Product market fit, this thing that gets thrown around, coined by Mark Andreessen, is a very difficult thing to achieve. So you're trying to predict what the market wants. You're trying to build a product exactly for the market. And sometimes hard work alone won't get you there. I think what you choose to work on and who you choose to work with, and actually kind of how badly you want it, which is more than just working hard, are more important than just the raw hours you put in. There are lots of people running restaurants and, you know, kind of meat space businesses, not in the startup world, who outwork startup entrepreneurs, but yet they don't succeed. Or if they do succeed, it's at much lower numbers or much lower magnitude.
Right. And I would say that a large reason for that is that society has been sold romantic ideas. Romanticism is a very big part of things. Society very much seems to value effort. Effort is a big deal, and effort is sort of an arrival of sorts for society. That look how hard I work. Look how much effort I'm putting in, and therefore I am doing the right thing by doing that. And the problem that arises from that oftentimes is those who are very efficient are demonized, because very often you will find in every domain those who don't work nearly as, quote, hard as everybody else, but they get 10 times the results, and they're considered to be lucky. And so I think if you look at, I like to pattern things around nature, and if you look at nature, it doesn't work hard. If you look at gravity, it doesn't work hard. If you look at a tree and a leaf falling off of a tree, it doesn't work hard. If you look at a water going down a river, it doesn't work hard. So everything moves according to its own rhythm. And whatever necessities are there, they're there, and therefore they need to be worked around. But working hard is an added extra romantic step in order to put another feather in the cap, which says, I succeeded by working hard.
Yeah, it's also, I think there's a, sometimes I also think of work as a set of things that you have to do that you don't want to do. If you want to do it, it's not work. So example is like, you know, you might be grinding at work for 10 hours and it's suffering, it's painful. And then you get home and to relax, you play video games. But to an alien watching from the outside, playing a video game is more intense than whatever you're doing at work. You're running around with a gun shooting at people, you're jumping over collecting mushrooms, gold coins, whatever it is. That could be construed as hard work. But because you want to do it, because you can lose yourself in it, there's not suffering. So I don't think it's people get burned out on work. They just get burned out on work they don't want to do, which is a form of suffering. So not and every thing that you need to do, not every step of it is going to be pleasant, of course. But it's really important to align yourself in work where you're not suffering. So when I find like engineers who are out trying to be salespeople or salespeople who are out trying to be engineers, it's better to team up with someone who really enjoys the other side of it and stick to what you're good at. Team up. So that's why I think founding teams are very powerful, where you have one person who can build and one person who can sell. Because then neither one feels like they're doing hard work. Each one is doing what they enjoy. But together, the company from the outside looks like it's working really hard. And as we know, in a billion-dollar company, the employees aren't working any harder than a million-dollar company. They're just doing the right thing. And the right
Right.
people are doing the right things in the right way.
And I think one of perhaps the key element of hard work, which I must say is an elephant in the room, which is rarely discussed in the world, is that hard work is considered to be a door prize. It seems to be sort of the preparing of the bed of failure. I think that a lot of times hard work is done in order to have an excuse for the mind when the mind comes attacking and says, "How come you didn't make it?" And if a person is armed with the ammunition that I have worked hard, then he has an answer for the mind. Whereas if he just sat on the couch and did nothing, he would not have that ammunition. So many times people do hard work in order to have an answer for the mind because they know they're going to fail anyways.
And externally, if I'm an investor in a company and it fails, if the entrepreneur worked hard, that feels more forgivable socially than someone
Yes.
who's just like, oh, I tried it, I took a shot, the market didn't want it, I gave up quickly. I used to
That's
have an
right.
engineer who worked for me who was absolutely brilliant. And he would create great products and he would work an hour, 2 hours a day. And then he would very blatantly sit around watching cricket matches or playing Counter-Strike, which was this online game. While all the other people in the office were just looking at him, and he just looked really lazy, and people complained to me about him all day long. But he added tons of value by creating the right
Yes,
product, the right way, at the right
efficiency.
time. Yeah, so he
Yes,
could get away with it, and he
that's
didn't
right.
have this pretense of sitting around the water cooler and talking or going to meetings. He didn't want to waste time on those things. He basically either enjoying himself or he was working on what he thought was effective. And I think his talent, to some extent, allowed him to get away with it, but just given the era that we live in, talent matters so much more than hard work, and
Yes.
he would exemplify that.
Yes. And it's interesting because all the books that have been coming out in recent years, from Outliers to all the books related to talent being secondary to hard work and the 10,000 hours and everything, it's the exact opposite message, that hard work supersedes talent. And I think that's a separate sort of discussion, but there is, there is a truth to the fact that humans tend to do many things in order to satisfy those who are watching them. And they also do tend to do many things in order to satisfy the idea of having tried and romantically failed. Failure is also something that is considered not only okay, but almost lauded. Now, as I say these words, I'm certain that some in the audience are getting ready to say that one must fail in order to succeed. And quite frankly, I've never looked at that as failure. When I say failure, I've always looked at it personally as ultimate failure, not getting to where you want to go ultimately. Everything besides that, to me, I call experimentation. I think everything is experimentation. There is no failure along the way.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, especially I think the speed of iteration is what drives learning. So, in Gladwell and others, they say 10,000 hours of grinding. I think it's quite that simple. If I do the same thing for 10,000 hours, that's not going to be very effective. If in 10,000 hours I run 100 experiments, that's great, but it's not as effective as if I ran 1,000 experiments or 10,000 experiments. So the speed of iteration matters. That said, it's still not hard work alone, because I could play golf for 10,000 hours and I would never be Tiger Woods. Right. And Tiger Woods played golf for 10,000 hours. Yes, it was hard work, but it was also for the sheer love of it. Like he enjoyed he enjoyed most of those days, most of those times. And it was sort of in his nature and character by some point to not look at hitting the golf links as hard work. He looked at that as the thing that he most wanted to do that day. So this idea of suffering and sacrifice, although it's romantic, and it levels the playing field a little bit, I think it also misleads us. It misleads us into thinking that everybody can be everyone. One interesting hypothesis I heard is that in modern society, one of the reasons we have more unhappy people is because of the myth that everyone can be everything. So if you think you can be, Larry Page or Steve Jobs or Jeff Bezos or Mark Zuckerberg, but you didn't make it, it's because you didn't work hard enough, and then you feel lousy about yourself. Whereas right. The reality is, like, their talents intersected in the right way at the right time, and they put in the hard work for the thing that they were meant to create, and your talents are going to intersect in a completely different way, in a different place at a different time. And a lot of life is just searching for what it is that you're uniquely good at and where and when to apply that thing.
That's exactly right. The last line that you mentioned, absolutely, I think, is the key. This sort of may sound sort of really counterintuitive, but I don't think anybody fails because of not working hard enough. I don't think that creature exists. I think that people fail because they didn't really want it. I don't think that a sufficient degree of desire exists in a given person, but because he just didn't do enough work, that he failed. I don't really buy that. I think I would say that if he didn't do the quote work or do the leg work or do whatever needed to be done, it's because the desire, you got to look more upstream. I think the desire wasn't there. I don't think the desire is bursting through you and you choose to hold back that desire and not do it. I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, I've always had a belief that companies don't fail when they run out of cash. They fail when the founders and team run out of energy. They basically say, okay, we're done here. At some level, you have to give up on something. And just because, and it's pragmatic, there are other things that you want to do more by that point. But if you have an unswerving desire to do something, then usually you'll get it.
Yes.
Although I think in this modern age, we tend to have too many loosely scattered imitative desires.
Correct.
There's that great old Chinese saying, like, man who chases two rabbits catches none.
Yes.
So a lot of it is just about cultivating your desire and being ready.
Well, there's the want with a small W, and then there's want with a big W.
Yeah. I'm reminded of that Antoine de Saint-Exupéry line where he basically said something like, if you want to build a ship and hit the high seas, then don't gather the men and start giving orders and chopping the wood and building a fire and, you know, building a ship. Instead, teach them to yearn for the vast and endless sea.
Yes.
And that is a lot of the role of a leader. It's to inspire people.
Absolutely.
Such that it's their own. Another great definition I once heard was that, you know, management is telling people what to do. Leadership is getting them to want to do it themselves.
Correct. Yes. I think a leader is far more hands-off than what sort of the business world tells him he should be. I don't think it's about managing anybody. I think it really is becoming someone that others look at that leader and see in him what they would love to see in themselves.
Yeah, I was actually talking to a founder the other day of a company that's now worth almost $10 billion, and he's done obviously quite well. And I asked him, like, what would you do differently if you were doing it again? And he said he would micromanage people less, which I thought was really interesting. I did not expect that answer. I thought it would be some other answer about how he could have been even bigger. But he actually just felt like he made a mistake by constantly trying to order people around.
I think it also matters how what you just said is going to be heard. because oftentimes things are heard through the lens of morality and right and wrong and correct and incorrect and good and bad. And so that might be heard as, you are right, it is wrong to micromanage people, you should leave them alone. And I would say it's far more, and I'm sure that he meant it this way as well, that it's far more that it wasn't that that was, quote, wrong or immoral, that that was ineffective.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so when we get to morality, for example, one of the things that Silicon Valley likes to talk a lot about is 10x engineers. And now it's been broadened a little bit to be a little more politically correct, 10x performers. But it is true that you can have individuals, especially when they're leveraged through code or capital, like on hedge fund managers or engineers, or even on the sales side, where someone can literally accomplish 10x what the next closest person in the organization can. And the easiest way to see this is founders. One founder can build a company that's 1,000 times more valuable than the next founder. And so there's kind of this idea of 10x performers. And obviously it can't be through hard work, because they're not doing 10x the work. That's impossible.
That's right.
Everyone's
That's
working
right.
hard. So then we pay lip service to this idea of 10x performers, and everybody wants to hire them. But then we go around paying them 1x or 1.1x or 1.2x, because society doesn't want to hear this idea of that you can actually pay a 10x performer 10x. So what happens is 10x performers all end up leaving and starting their own companies because they're not getting paid 10x otherwise. It's the only way to do it. So we have a few socially acceptable areas where you can get paid 10x, basically if someone else is not making the decision. If you made it by yourself or for yourself, or you at least steered the ship long enough that you managed to capture more of the value for yourself, then you get to be a 10x performer. But I think one of the things that's utterly broken in the startup ecosystem is that we all know and acknowledge that 10x performers or higher, 100x, 1000x exist, especially within certain circumstances and situations, yet we do not compensate them at those levels because it is socially unacceptable to do so. That one's worth covering another discussion. It's a longer discussion, but I think that it's just an example of how real truth is hard to speak, because it offends people. It hurts the sensibility
yes.
of equality. It hurts the sensibility of how the world ought to work. It hurts the sensibility of morality. But you can always fix things in other ways. It's better to acknowledge how the world actually works and then figure out maybe how you want to change it, as opposed to live with your head in the sand and everyone has to speak the same way in the same language and the same coded words. And you may actually end up just denying how the world actually works in that process. You may end up deluding yourself.
Yes. Yeah, I think humans seek truth to some degree, so long as it has conditions. It must fit within the framework already established, or it's not accepted. And so the problem isn't that the truth is wrong. The problem is that there's too many frameworks. There's, you know, everyone's walking on eggshells because so many eggs have been created, you know, morality to what is correct, what is right, what is fair. Then societies and institutions created around the very idea of enforcing fairness. You know, quite honestly, the jungle in the wild is far more fair and equitable and moral than any fabricated society in this world.
I think we'll end on that. Thank you, Calvin.
Yes, sir.